Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 96-year-old Alberto Bertoli of Belmont, California, a lifelong resident of the San Francisco Bay Area. In fact, you'll still find him playing bocce ball in downtown San Francisco every Tuesday. In late 1944, he found himself on the freezing front lines of Europe with the rail splitters of the 84th Infantry Division, from France to the Netherlands to Germany. What were you doing over there, Al?
Well, we were up in the front line. And all we had to do is make sure the enemy didn't come in. I remember one time we had so much fire trying to get to the bulge that we had to jump off a railroad bridge to get to where we wanted to go. There was a lot of mortar fire behind us, and we had to keep moving because they really had us zeroed in. So that's when we finally got into where I told you, that railroad station where that idiot come in.
Well, when you say jump off a railroad bridge, what was below you? What did you jump off onto?
I landed on a kind of an island on the side of it. I didn't jump straight down. Oh, I'd say it was about 10 feet. I had a BAR and an automatic.
Browning automatic rifle, yeah?
I had that thing and I hit it across my knees when I landed. Boy, I thought that was the end, you know. But I made it. I made it to where I was supposed to go. And then, like I say, I went into that railroad station and 88 hit.
Yeah, tell us that story. You're in the railroad station with a friend of yours, right?
Yeah.
And what happened? You guys were trying to figure out where to go?
No, we were pulling guard duty because everybody was down below in the center. We pulled guard duty. I think it was 10 minutes at a time, or 15, I forget now. But anyhow, in this railroad station, there were doors at both ends. And this one fella, he told me to get away from the door where I was standing, close this little room. And then there was another door that went to the cellar where all the rest of the GIs were. So when he said this stuff is coming in, and I moved to the door and went to the cellar, he moved in my place, and 88 hit where he was standing, and he died. So I took him, carried him downstairs, called the medics. He was gone. He was gone. That shrapnel went right through him. It was a sad day, boy. I couldn't get over that for about a week and a half, before I could really know what I'm doing and what I'm here for, you know?
You were just in kind of a daze from that?
Yeah. And that's how I lost a lot of my hearing. There's the 155s, the 88s, and all the shells coming in. You know, when they bounce you off the ground and hit close by and everything starts to fall apart, you start to think then, how long is this going to last? You know, you want to get out and get home. I was stupid when I was in infantry. I should have stayed where I was.
You described that, you know, when a shell hits and bounces you off the ground, when it hits that close by. Is that something that was frequent?
Oh, yeah. You know, I remember one time there was a place that was snow. We were trying to get this town. We were crawling along this place, but there was a drop down there, and you could stay there, and the Germans would fire on us, you know? But I got halfway up, and my buddies Connie and Bartosik says, "Al, come back, come back." And I tried to get up, and they stopped firing at me. So I laid down, and I could see the bullet holes coming through the snow. I tried to back up, but with those overcoats they give us, if you back up, you're going to get a ton of snow in them. So Connie and Bartosik told me, says, "Al, you better get up. Hell of high water, get up." So I got up a little bit, went down, and they fired on me. I got up and run like the Dickens and get into this cave-like. And then I was all right. But I had snow packed up inside of me, you can't believe.
Well, and of course, that's what the Battle of the Bulge is so legendary for, is the weather and how cold it was and how much snow. And you guys got in pretty early, just a couple days into the Battle of the Bulge. The 84th got there. So how bad were those weather conditions? What was the hardest part for you with the weather?
They were cold. I'll tell you what, I change my socks every day. Dirty or not, I change it because you get frostbite. We took care of ourselves pretty well. But, you know, you're there trying to save your country. In the meantime, you're trying to save yourself. And so are they. I mean, some of those people are told to do the same thing we're told to do. They probably have families and kids. I'll tell you an incident one time. I was on top of this place, like I told you, where we packed the door from town, put it over that hole. I was on the right flank. I walked over to the edge, and this is five Germans. I took my carbine. I fired over them, you know. I didn't shoot at them. I just fired over them. They're probably running to get home or whatever. They're not coming back. Those guys probably have a family. And I let them go. Maybe I shouldn't. They didn't have any ammunition. They didn't have any rifles. They didn't have any BARs or anything like that. It was unreal. They had a canteen in their hand. That's the only thing they had.
And you just said, maybe I shouldn't have. I'm sure that's something you've thought about a lot over the years. I wonder if there were any times where there was a German who did the same thing for you.
I don't think so. Because they were told by the greatest nut in the world what to do. And I mean a nut. I think if we went head to head, we'd have to fire at each other. And it's a shame. It's a shame. But I was lucky to come home. All I lost was my hearing. And I had to fight the VA for years. Just recently, they acknowledged that I had lost the hearing. When they took my test and everything, they told me how. I don't know how you can hear at all because there's nothing on the monitor that shows your hearing. So they're trying to get me something that's not going to be enormous. It's going to be a little better and more clarity. I still drive. I just bought a brand new car. They said to me, would you buy a brand new car for you? 96 years old. If I don't spend the money, somebody else is going to spend it. So I bought a brand new car.
Back when you were a much younger man in Europe during World War II, is there something that you would say now was the most frightening thing you had to face? The thing that got to you the most or made you wonder the most whether you were going to come home?
Yeah. Well, we crossed the Rhine River. Across the Rhine River, we had quite a ways to go. It was a wall we had to jump. We got out of this house, went upstairs. There was a pole right in front of that window. And the three of us were standing there. Bartoszek was the one who was in front. An 88 come in and split that pole. Something, the fragments come through that window. They hit Bartoszek. It wasn't bad, but he had to go back to the CP and then go to the hospital. And about a week later, he come back. But what I didn't like at night, we were in the building. These airplanes, German Luftwaffe, would fly over. They would drop bombs. Boy, you don't know where they were going to hit. That was frightening, very frightening, because you're trying to cross a river and paddle to get to the other side. You don't know if you're ever going to make it. I mean, when they drop those bombs out of their planes, I mean, they're running that river. Not one plane, they're coming two or three. And I mean, they were close, real close, too close for comfort.
Well, and on that thing with the window, it sounds like you're saying if that pole wasn't there, you wouldn't be here.
No, because that 88 hit that pole, and all the splinters and everything hit that window, and broke the glass. I guess part of the glass hit Bartoszek. The medics took him away, and then we left there, went on to the Elbe River. That's when the Germans started coming over the river. They didn't want to surrender to the Russians, so they wanted to surrender to us. Well, I didn't have any rest for about 3 days. Not only me, the rest of us. I was pulling guard duty. I started to doze off, and a German officer come and tap me on the shoulder. He said, surrender, surrender. I put my pistol out. He said, okay. So I took him down to CP. CP, where'd you get him? I said, I got him crossing the river. I didn't tell him I was half asleep.
You know, Al, that's the first time anyone's ever told me that. I didn't know you could capture someone while you were asleep. That's pretty impressive.
Asleep. I was just dozing off. And when somebody touched me on the shoulder, first thing I did was went for my pistol. And boy, I mean, they were coming. On the Elbe River, all they would do was surrender to them. We got a bunch of them. You know, that was the best place ever was while we were in the service. There was a warehouse or a storage for lockers, frozen food stuff. One day, one of the guys said to me, "Hey, Al, you was a butcher, wasn't you?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You know," he said, "I was stationed on duty in this storage place. And you ought to see the meat that got stuck to the ceiling." I said, "Oh, yeah?" He said, "Why don't you come, the first chance you get, come and see what we can do." You know, I said, "Okay." So it was about 5-6 miles away, I guess. We get there, man alive. These rooms just stuck to the ceiling with beef. Couldn't believe it. Butter in barrels. I was on the second floor. I took this one barrel, I threw it out, let it fall on the ground. From the second floor, you know what was in it? Strawberries. It was full of strawberries. So we got one hindquarter down. We set it out to thaw. I said to the guys, I says, "You know, there's a car out there, but you got to fire it with wood. So if you guys can get the wood, we'll fire it and get the hindquarter in there, get it back to where I'm at. When it thaws out, I'll cut it up. We'll share the meat." So we did. And we cut that hindquarter up. Shared meat and everything. Oh, there was vegetables. There was bread. But this stuff is all frozen. They're prepared to live forever. I could not believe it. But I'll tell you, they sure had this warehouse full. They really did. They were thinking for 100 years, believe me. Because the meat that they had in it, you know what a hindquarter weighs? About 180 pounds. And you stack that thing one on top of the other, and they're probably about 8 inches thick. They go in the storage from the floor to the ceiling. It's a long way. And we got 8-foot ceilings. They don't have 8-foot ceilings.
Well, yeah, so they were gearing up for an exhaustive supply. But the reason it was such a big deal to you and your friends is I bet you hadn't eaten food like that in a long time.
No, in a long time. All it was K-rations.
While you were over there, did you ever hear anything about the concentration camps? About what the Nazis were doing?
Yeah, I heard about them. Yeah. The way they burned people and stuff like that, the Germans.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You ought to see the holes they dug. They just piled bodies. And they one on top of the other. There was something else, man. I seen the after part when we come back. But, see, I was with the F Company, 335th Infantry, and 333rd C Company, I think, had the worst part of the fighting than we did. We didn't have the worst part, but we had a good deal of it, you know. You know, they were taught. You know, the kids, we were going up a road into this town, and we got fire, and it come from a steeple in a church, Hodges. He was walking up the middle of the road, and all he carried was grenades in his pocket and a pistol. He lives in Eureka, California. I went to see him. He went up and says, "Keep going, keep going." And we kept going, figured, hey, this guy's going to hit us. Finally got up there, and the guys got into church, was a kid. They were holding us back so the other ones could back off. Another time, I was on the line. I don't think it was more than 50 yards away. Sergeant Zales, he was with me. We're in this hole. And the Germans were about 50 yards away. There was a truck between us, loaded with ammunition. They hit that truck. You can't believe the flight that we had. They had hit this box of ammunition that we had. So Zales says to me, "Al, you got to go get some ammunition." I said, "You know what, Zales? Screw it. If you want the ammunition, you go get it. I'm going to fix the bayonet. Stay in this hole. If they come, I'm going to die fighting them." But I said, "I'm not getting out of this hole." He got out and went and got the ammunition. That's the worst thing I ever seen. That truck just lit up like a stove, wooden stove. It was unreal. I'll never forget that.
I bet you felt the heat of that.
Oh, I know. You felt the heat. It felt good.
Melted some snow around your feet?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a funny thing. I always wore extra stuff on my feet because I didn't want to get frostbite. Guys used to tell me, "Hey, you're crazy." I said, "I might be crazy." And another thing I did, they had mines. I always walked in the footsteps of the guy that was 3 feet in front of me. Never made another. One time, he was about 10 feet away from me. Stepped on the mine, lost his legs. The medics come up. They took care of him, took him away. But the steps after that, I put my foot on. Never made a new one. precaution.
Well, and clearly that paid off because he made it home, and he's still driving at age 96. Go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page for photos of Al then and now, including some from his experience last year with Honor Flight Bay Area. We'll discuss that trip of a lifetime when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.